Love and Light. This is Healthy Talk Show for Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. I'm Robert.
And I'm Marissa.
Healthy Talk Show streams live on Mondays at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 3 a.m. UTC over at healthytalkshow.com/live, with podcast versions available soon after over at healthytalkshow.com/subscribe. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. healthytalkshow.com/YouTube.
And healthytalkshow.com/support if you'd like to help support this show financially using PayPal or Patreon. It's value for value. If we provide you value, please provide some back in whatever form you feel. And yes, feedback is valuable. Rate us in iTunes, email us, or call and leave us a voicemail, 509-878-3229.
Twitch Prime, Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, go over to healthytalkshow.com/support and click on the Twitch Prime thing. You can give us free money.
Yes.
100% free for you and free for us. It doesn't cost you anything. It's included with your Amazon Prime subscription, a little bonus that they throw in because Amazon owns Twitch and they're trying to get them up there with YouTube.
Pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. Show notes for this episode with links of everything we talk about located over at healthytalkshow.com/HTS16. Show housekeeping. We had technical difficulties last night because we usually record on Mondays. Computer issues with Windows and graphics display drivers. Very boring stuff. Sorry. But we're up. We're ready to roll. Tang's ready. Cat's good to go. We're ready. And lip balm making segment this Friday night. Not sure what time, but we will be making lip balm.
And pancakes on Thursday.
No. Streaming that. No, no, no.
Oh, I thought we were. No, no, no. I'm sorry. No, no, no. I screwed it up.
We are not streaming that. We are streaming the lip balm. Come on now. We don't overload ourselves here. Come on. Can't overload ourselves. We gotta be realistic. Ready to get into the show?
Let's do it.
All right. Time. Meet Katie Bowman, one woman who helped make the world's first image of a black hole. Followed right behind, the internet's idiots are already trying to discredit Katie Bowman's historic accomplishment. And I have a clip about this. So let's take a listen.
Humanity revealed a picture of something so huge and amazing, even Einstein had not dared dream it existed.
We have seen what we thought was unseeable.
And in the process, one member of the telescope team became an instant icon.
Even though we had predicted that if you had a black hole that you would see this ring of light, we didn't know we were going to get that ring of light.
And then the internet ruined it. Within hours, there were debates on Reddit questioning her credibility, phony Instagram profiles, and fake Twitter accounts, one soliciting online donations. Many of the accounts are now suspended. And top YouTube results for the name Katie Bowman included a video arguing that she'd done far less work than men on her team. It was the internet at its worst.
Ooh, ay, 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 what?
That's typical for being a woman in science, so.
Absolutely horrible.
It is, but yeah. That's the reality of life as a woman scientist.
Very male-dominated field.
Yeah.
And boys club.
It's definitely a boys club, and women professors usually have to do above and beyond to be kind of recognized, and I think that bias is really prevalent.
Well, there you go.
Especially in the hard sciences. So anything involving chemistry, physics, math, all that's very male dominated. But
yep. Well, her colleagues came to her defense, or at least one of them.
Andrew Chail, the colleague getting much of the credit in the viral posts targeting Bowman, quickly came to her defense in a now viral tweet of his own, writing, "While I appreciate the congratulations on a result that I worked hard on for years, if you're congratulating me because you have a sexist vendetta against Katie, please go away and reconsider your priorities in life."
If.
Oh.
Straight up.
Hey, props to him. That's good.
Yeah. You gotta. Yeah, that's bullcrap.
I mean, science is, it's a very collaborative effort, so we need to give everyone credit.
Yeah.
Women included.
The whole team.
We got to build upon each other.
That's right. That's what it's all about. Collaboration. Wall Street Journal, the secret trust scores companies use to judge us all. And since the Wall Street Journal has a paywall, I actually can't show the full story on this. So that's fine. A service called Sift is used by startups and established companies alike, including Instacart and LinkedIn, to help protect against various forms of fraud. More than 16,000 signals inform the Sift score, a rating of 1 to 100 used to flag devices, credit cards, and accounts owned by an entity that a company might want to block. This score is like a credit score, but for overall trustworthiness, says a company spokeswoman. One key difference: there's no way to find out your Sift score. Companies that use services like this often mention it in their privacy policies, but how many of us realize our account behaviors are being shared with companies we've never heard of in the name of security? How much of the information one company shares with these fraud detection services is used by other clients of that service? And why can't we access any of this data ourselves to update, correct, or delete it? For our protection, the writer of the story asks. SIFT judges whether or not you can be trusted, yet there's no file with your name on it. It can produce upon request. That's because it doesn't need your name to analyze your behavior. Our customers will send us events like account created, portfolio, profile photo updated, someone sent a message, review written, an item was added to a shopping cart, says SIFT Chief Executive Jason Tan. It's technically possible to make user data difficult or impossible to link to a real person. Apple and others say they take steps to prevent such de-anonymizing. SIFT doesn't use those techniques, and an individual's name can be among the characteristics its customers share with it in order to determine the riskiness of a transaction.
Jeez.
So they don't even take any steps to.
That's horrible.
SIFT. Good luck finding information about SIFT online, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely difficult.
I tried. They picked a very strategic name. Yes, they did. I've noticed that.
Very good name to pick.
Plus, this also reminded me of that Chinese social scoring system.
Yes, the social scoring. Yeah, that's it's hard to find out information about that, too. So
yeah, but it's just, you know, they're analyzing what you're purchasing and all sorts of behaviors that you're not even sure what they're
being tracked.
It's crazy.
Being tracked. I have nothing to hide. Well, then why do they track you?
Yeah.
What's the purpose? If there's no value in doing it, then why do it?
And then so this got me looking into the issue more and, you know, how they can actually collect this data on you since you can't access it. And so I was looking into, there's this general data protection regulation.
Yeah, GDPR.
So GDPR. And I was looking into this article, what you need to know about the right to erasure. And I mean, basically it says that the loopholes are really large.
Yeah. GDPR, I think, went into effect last year because we all got emails about privacy policies being updated to be GDPR compliant from all the companies we linked in. All these companies had to be correct, compliant because it was an EU thing.
Yeah. And so even though obviously we're not in the EU here at Healthy Talk Show, but because these are worldwide companies, they're supposed to follow these regulations and they claim that they are GDPR compliant, but it basically says that the right to erasure only applies if your personal data is no longer necessary, which of course they're going to argue that it is to do the function of these companies, which is your determine your trustworthiness. So you basically can't really get erased or opt out of this, at least as it stands, which I do not agree with.
Well, there's a lot of information about everyone out there.
I know. And it doesn't mean that I like it. No. I have nothing to hide, but doesn't mean that I need to be tracked.
I know. Bloomberg, Amazon workers are listening to what you tell Alexa. Amazon.com employs thousands of people around the world to help improve the Alexa digital assistant powering its line of Echo speakers. The team listens to voice recordings captured in Echo owners' homes and offices. The recordings are transcribed, annotated, and then fed back into the software as part of an effort to eliminate gaps in Alexa's understanding of human speech and help it better respond to commands. I have a clip from CBS This Morning, which we'll play.
Alexa, add wrapping paper to the shopping list.
I've put wrapping paper on your shopping list.
On Echo. An investigation revealed Amazon employs thousands of people worldwide who listen to voice recordings captured by the company's digital assistant, Alexa. Amazon acknowledged the listening and released a statement that said, in part, "We only annotate an extremely small number of interactions from a random set of customers in order to improve the customer experience. Employees do not have direct access to information that can identify the person or account as part of this workflow." CBS News.
Here we go.
Also reported that a lot of this listening is going on in an unmarked building in Romania.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good look.
Yeah. Not a good look.
Not a good look.
What is the legitimate business purpose of this for Amazon?
They're trying to make it better. When you say you want wrapping paper added to your list and it hears raccoon paper or whatever it hears,
It likes to go back to a human and see why it made a mistake or why it gave you the wrong answer. It is trying to improve the service. Lots of artificial intelligence systems do this. They have the machines give you answers, and they have the humans check it. They feed the humans checking back into the machine. Machine gets better.
That's for a special kind of party, raccoon paper, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
So the company wants to make it sound as if this is all benign, and it very well might be, but when you have thousands of people doing this and the company saying very small limited amount, those things don't seem to line up to me. Am I wrong?
Well, it can be, so yes, there are lots of people doing this. This is a huge operation, right? Thousands of people, big operation. On the other hand, their intentions are definitely to make the service better, but it is also true that you should feel weird about it. It is.
You should feel weird about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Continuing on.
Really, really weird. And they say there's no identifiable information, right? They don't tie it to your name. But what if we're talking and I say, hey, Alexa, give this to Major Garrett. Major Garrett's being difficult on set. That's pretty right. Identifiable. And yes. The person's going to listen to it and know what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
That, wow.
Yeah.
He's like completely, you think this guy's, yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool. We're all good with it. No, then he flips it around. It's pretty funny. But with the AI learning and everything, I just have to throw in this little story. A lot of people don't know about this. Google got a lot of their voice recognition from a service called Goog 411, which was a 411 service that Google had back when 411 would charge, and it was all robotic. It was all AI, whatever based. So you'd speak to it, and it would give you the phone number, the place you're looking for. It was all processing,
crazy.
Learning speech patterns, learning all kinds of things. You know,
wow.
So that's how they got so good so quick. They're giving away a free service, but you know, just capturing all those voice profiles.
It's just another reminder, too, that there's, you know, actually humans behind this AI learning. Mm-hmm. We've addressed this before, too, with the videos.
Yes.
And how.
What were those centers called? Or what was that?
No, I don't remember what the centers were
like
called.
Sensor centers or I don't know. Moderators. They're called content moderators or something like that. It was
for
really weird.
For Facebook.
Yeah.
It was primarily Facebook.
Yeah.
But it was, again, that people still have to sift through this data.
Yep.
Some other things that kind of stuck out.
Mm-hmm.
I like how it says the company, in reference to Amazon, says people who opt out of the program.
Oh, I actually have an opt out clip. Hold on.
Oh,
sexual
perfect.
Assault first.
The workers anonymously told the reporter that they believe they heard sexual assaults and physical violence on the recording, but they could do nothing about it. Is that true? That is true, and that raises an interesting conflict. So maybe Amazon should have identifiable information in extreme circumstances.
But
there's a warrant, so you can tie it back. But if you do that, then everybody should be much more weirded about their privacy.
Oh, yeah.
Trade-off there.
Yeah, because you're getting personal information. You can get bank accounts. You can get what's going on in your home, whether you're having marital problems, problems at work with colleagues, Major Garrett. You know,
it's not true. I totally deny it.
Absolutely
not true.
I mean, so they're just. Do you think that we're getting to the point, Nick, where we just shouldn't have these devices in our homes?
No, I think if you have
no. The answer is yes.
In an argument with your spouse or something, you probably shouldn't have a recording device in that room. I mean, we need to
but
be aware.
What the heck? Yeah, I know. A, how big are the houses that these people are living in? Because a lot of people that I know live in studio apartments. You can it could track you throughout the house.
Yeah.
So let's want to talk about opting out.
You choose to have one of these devices in your house. Mm-hmm. You are putting a recording device in your house, and you should be aware of the trade-offs. It will give you great benefits. Timers, weather, answering questions, but...
Timers, weather, answering questions. Those are the great benefits of the...
Which
timers,
you can still do if you manually type it in.
Yes, it's not that difficult. And typing speed is good.
Yeah.
Being able to type is a good skill to have.
Regardless of whether a human is listening to it, we all know that machines are looking at it. We all know that the data is being fed back into the huge system of Amazon. You need to be aware of what the trade-offs are.
Anything you can do about opt out or anything like
yes,
that?
Yes, you can go into your preferences. Now, Amazon does not make this easy, but you can go in.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Why would they make it easy? Ay, caramba.
Into your Alexa app on your phone, there's a little hamburger menu on the top. You can click on Alexa Privacy, and then you have two choices. One, you can delete your data. And that will swipe it all away.
Delete it.
The other thing you can do is you can click a little setting that says something like, don't let Amazon use my data to improve its services. It's trying to push you into not clicking on it, but you can click on it and then your data won't be fed to the unmarked building in Romania.
It occurs to me that it's
perfect.
Except that they say that they still might have their recordings analyzed by people. So you can't
And you
really
were saying about
opt
opting out. Well, yeah, you can't opt out. That's true.
Yeah.
Occasionally, or more from the Bloomberg article, occasionally the listeners pick up things Echo owners would rather keep private, a woman singing badly off-key in a shower, or a child screaming for help. The team use internal chat rooms to share files when they need help parsing a muddled word, or come across an amusing recording. An amusing recording like what? That's what? That was in the article.
That's crazy.
The Intercept reported earlier this year that employees of Amazon owned Ring, that's the video doorbell company, manually identifies vehicles and people in videos captured by the company's doorbell camera as an effort to better train the software to do that work itself.
Jeez.
That's scary. Got anything else before I play this Fox Business clip that has nothing to do with this, but it was really weird that this was in this clip? Oh,
I mean, my other issue, too, is they're saying that, oh, you don't have identifiable information.
Bull crap.
But it says in the article that it's associated with an account number as well as the user's first name and device's serial number. I mean, that's
these
not
devices
private.
Are very, they're tracked. You can't.
And it's just weird, too, that, you know, I understand that employees want to let off steam, but it's weird when they're trading clips of you that you.
So what if you're having a little naughty time with your partner? They're gonna trade those back on those little instant messaging clients.
Oh yeah,
check this out. Check out this. Ooh, look, listen to that. Ooh, listen. Oh my.
Yeah.
Keep these things away from healthy talk show. Fox Business. We were trying to find a report on this for the Amazon Echo. Hopefully the dog stopped barking, and we found this little gem. That was pretty cool. I'm gonna play it.
Today on AI development, China has a very different approach to AI than the U.S. does. Now, this work with the China National University of Defense Technology could be used for surveillance and censorship. And we know that, you know, Bill, that the Chinese have all this data on its citizens. So, you know, you've got the Chinese looking at listening and surveilling in a much different capacity than the U.S. I don't think the U.S. wants to get to where China is, right?
Well, there you go.
Or do they?
Yeah.
It just seems like that's the direction that we're currently headed.
Yep.
And I don't know if enough is being done to stop that. Or if it's too late, honestly.
Probably too late. CNET. Law enforcement taps Google's sensor vault for location data, report says. New York Times, tracking phones. Google is a dragnet for the police. Police have used information from Google's Sensor Vault database to aid in criminal cases across the country, according to a report Saturday by the New York Times. The database has detailed location records from hundreds of millions of phones around the world, the report said. It's meant to collect information on users of Google's products so the company can better target them with ads and see how effective those ads are.
It's always with the ads selling with these guys.
But police have been tapping into the database to find missing pieces in investigations. Law enforcement can get geofence warrants seeking location data. Those kinds of requests have spiked in the past 6 months, and Google has received as many as 180 requests in 1 week. Google declined to answer specific questions about Sensor Vault, but said the company has narrowed how much identifiable information it gives to police. For geofence warrants, police carve out a specific area and time period, and Google can gather information from Sensor Vault about the devices that were present during that window. The information is anonymous, but police can analyze it and narrow it down to a few devices they might think will be relevant to the investigation. Then Google reveals those users' names and other data.
Oh.
Wow.
What other data?
Good luck finding stuff on Sensor Vault.
Yeah.
It's hard. Do a Google search for Sensor Vault. God. You don't find anything, and it's a Google product.
Wow.
That's weird.
Also, I like the other thing that you mentioned there, that they kind of figure out that a few devices that might be relevant. But then there was an example later where a man was actually wrongfully accused just because he also happened to be in the same area. And what's to protect you from that?
Nothing.
And then you get into this other argument, too, of where the police essentially could write you a ticket for curfew, or you get to more of a controlling state potentially.
Police state.
I was trying not to use those words, all I'm saying is, you know, what's the limit here?
I don't know. We have to establish that as a society. HealthyTalkShow.com. Ask at HealthyTalkShow.com.
Yes. Let us know.
At Discord. Reuters. 2 out of 3 hotels accidentally leak guests' personal data. according to Symantec. Research released by Symantec Corp on Wednesday looked at more than 1,500 hotel websites in 54 countries that ranged from two-star to five-star properties. Personal information includes full names, email addresses, credit card details, and passport numbers of guests that could be used by cybercriminals who are increasingly interested in the movements of influential business professionals and government employees, Symantec said. Odd. While it's no secret that advertisers are tracking users' browsing habits, in this case, the information shared could allow these third-party services to log into a reservation, view personal details, and even cancel the booking altogether, said Candid Woost, the primary researcher on the study. Research showed compromises usually occur with the hotel site when the hotel site sends confirmation emails with a link that has direct booking information. The reference code attached to the link could be shared with more than 30 different service providers, including social networks, search engines, and advertising analytics services. Jeez. More data being compromised. And then this article mentioned Marriott announces Starwood guest reservation database security incident. Actually, let me F11 that. So it looks nicer. There we go. Marriott announces Starwood. Yep. On September 8, 2018, Marriott received an alert from an internal security tool regarding an attempt to access a Starwood guest reservation database in the United States. Marriott quickly engaged leading security experts to help determine what occurred. Marriott learned that during the investigation, there had been unauthorized access to the Starwood network since 2014. Wow. The company recently discovered that an unauthorized party had copied encrypted information and took steps towards removing it. On November 19, 2018, Marriott was able to decrypt the information and determine that the contents from the Starwood guest All right.
Jeez.
It's getting bad.
But going back to the GDPR.
Yes.
They said in their defense, they're working to be more GDPR compliant.
That's good because the EU will crack down, I think.
Well, we'll see. But I mean, data leaks all over the place.
I actually got an email today from someone suing Vizio, it looks like.
Oh.
Less than 2 weeks left to get money from a settlement to file your claim online. Purchase a Vizio smart connected TV to the internet between February 1st, 2014 and 6th, 2017. You can get free money. The class action alleges that between February 1st and February 6th, 2017, Vizio violated privacy and consumer laws by collecting viewing data from certain smart TVs for sale to advertisers without sufficient disclosures. Vizio denies these allegations. The court has not decided who is right. I can get money, so that's good. You're spying on me and I get money for it. Thank you. Thanks, Vizio. What people, we've got to start establishing the boundaries, I would say, for privacy.
Yes.
Because it's getting very unhealthy. Your TVs are spying on you.
Your privacy is valuable.
Yes.
Keep it safe.
Yes.
HealthyTalkShow.com.
/support. KPIC CPS plan for 5G cell phone towers raise health concerns in Moringa. More 5G stuff. I got some clips. Let's take a listen.
Sitting at her home office, Ellie Marks has a device that measures her RF exposure. She's surrounded by campaign materials that she's used in a decade of pushing back against ever-expanding cell phone towers. For her, the fight is personal. Her husband started using a cell phone in 1986 and developed a brain tumor in 2008.
Used it all the time, held it to his right ear, and the tumor developed right where he held the phone.
Researchers do not agree right now about what constitutes safe RF exposure. The FCC and cell phone companies maintain radiation exposure from cell phones is not dangerous.
The FCC is lying to the public.
So far, every major...
Dang. She just blasts the FCC. They are lying to the public.
Plus that key word there that they said that health officials have not determined the safe limits. Mm-hmm. And that's because they still need to do these long-term
studies.
Yeah,
there are no studies, exactly.
We have no idea of the long-term health benefits. Or effects.
Yeah. It's concluded that it's not having a harmful impact.
Thankfully, her husband pulled through, but it was her wake-up call. Now she's taking on 5G. Running parallel to this fight against 5G is the race to be the first country to have it. The U.S. has been competing against China. Now all wireless companies claim they'll have 5G this year.
Ooh. Yeah. Let's look at the promise of 5G.
So the promise of 5G is that it's going to be significantly faster. So
significantly faster.
Think of being able to download a movie within minutes instead of waiting a long, long time.
To maintain.
Wait,
How many people download movies on their phone?
How long does it take? Yeah. Isn't it usually a few minutes?
My 4G is about 50 megabits per second down, so I don't know.
Yeah.
How much faster I need to get.
I know. I mean, plus Netflix, they always seem to load really quickly.
Yeah, and you're not downloading, you're streaming.
Yeah.
So people running BitTorrent on their phones and downloading movies? I don't get it.
They're downloading libraries instantly.
Yeah, like, of Linux distributions, legally?
I have no idea.
Gain this speedy connection, cell phone companies claim they need additional cell towers in communities like Moraga. Ellie says she'd rather see these companies stick to fiber.
There's a better way to do it, and that would be fiber to the premises. We don't need these small, so-called small cells every few homes in our communities.
Fiber is good. It's just expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with that from a safety perspective.
And yeah,
it's
fiber.
It's fast.
Yeah.
Nothing like a physical connection.
Yep. And just to trigger people, here's our president, the United States, talking about 5G.
Secure 5G networks will absolutely be a vital link to America's prosperity and national security in the 21st century. 5G will be as much as 100 times faster than the current 4G cellular network.
100 times faster? What?
Wow.
That's really fast.
It will transform the way our citizens work, learn, communicate, and travel. It will make American farms more productive, American manufacturing more competitive, and American healthcare better and more accessible. Basically, it covers almost everything when you get right down to it.
5G is amazing.
What doesn't it do?
I love 5G.
Wow.
Amazing. And just as 4G networks paved the way for smartphones and all of the exciting breakthroughs, they made possible so many things. More secure and resilient. 5G networks will also create astonishing and really thrilling new opportunities for our people.
Wow, that's great.
It's probably true, making new jobs, putting 5G everywhere, but
well,
don't want that.
Like I always ask, just out of curiosity, I always ask, what is Europe doing? The Brussels Times, radiation concerns halt Brussels 5G development for now.
Cool.
In July, the government concluded an agreement with three telecom operators to relax the strict radiation standards in Brussels. But according to the region, it is now impossible to estimate the radiation from the antennas required for the service. Environment Minister Céline Fornault said, "The people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. We cannot leave anything to doubt. The Brussels region has particularly strict radiation standards for telecom applications. The standard of 6 volts per meter has already led to problems in the past with providing fast mobile internet via 4G in the capital." So they have a problem with 4G.
Yeah.
5G is not happening, at least in Brussels. And isn't that where, you know, a lot of powerful decision makers live?
Yeah. But props to them. I really liked when she said, "We're not using our people as guinea pigs."
Oh, heck yeah.
Like,
fantastic.
Yeah.
That's right. And your job is to serve the people. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, protect the people.
Well, yeah. At least look out for their best interest. Jeez Louise.
From the chat and saying this is basically another way to charge more.
Absolutely.
Probably true.
Oh, no, that's they're all the companies, all these 5G plans that are going to roll out, they're all going to be $10 or $15 more. I think Verizon already announced theirs, and it's already $10 more or something. It's just a way to raise the price. Yeah, it's better. It's more efficient. It's the best, but we're going to charge you more money for it. Wait a second. Can't I just stick with the 4G? Can I go back to 3G and get charged less? I'll take 3G. I'm good with that. Can I take a lower number? 2G? Yeah, 2G's 2G. A little slow. 2G's 1G. A little slow. 2G's a little slow. All right, the next web. Meet the biohackers who are putting technology into their own bodies. A world in which everyone is wearing powerful computers on their faces may be out of ways, but there are already those looking to past it. To some, the logical endpoint of humanity's relationship with technology is full integration, the augmentation of the brain, the augmentation of the human body with tech. This is known as biohacking, and there is already a community of those dedicated to the practice. There are a variety of examples, largely coming out of the U.S. and largely performed in DIY environments. From injected serums claiming to cure HIV to the insertion of magnets into fingertips, the biohacking industry is seemingly open to anything.
All right, I'm ready for the clip on this.
Yes, and the BBC did a good thing called Meet the Biohackers. and let's check it out.
Have you got something for me?
I've got a chip in my hand.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And that has my directions on it.
It does have your directions.
Oh, I can see the chip.
It feels a bit like a matchstick in there. Kind of, that sort of size.
Yeah, it's about the size of a grain of rice.
Okay, so how do I get my directions from this?
So you just bump your phone against the chip, hold it against there, and there you go.
Oh yay! And there it is.
There it is.
It's read the address off
Yep.
Straight into Google Maps.
Straight into Google Maps.
That is practical. I'm gonna put a little chip in my hand. I'm assuming it's NFC. And just so I could program it to do things.
Yeah.
So I guess I would assume he uses it for light switches at the house. I don't know. His car, maybe. What do you think?
I don't understand. Can he just text people his address as opposed to, yeah, hey, scan my hand.
Here's the address.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Meet the biohackers, Livu Babits.
I meet the next biohacker on Hampstead Heath in London. Livu Babits has developed something called the North Sense. He can literally feel North.
What's inside here?
Lots of electronics. So you have a compass chip, you have a Bluetooth, and lots of other stuff that are making it work.
And how is it attached?
So there are two titanium bars going one from here to here and one from here to here.
Oh yeah, I can feel them.
Yeah.
And a bar in here. Piercings here. They're still a bit red. How fresh are they?
They're not that fresh, but with all the people touching, pushing.
With all weirdos like me. Go around, face north. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He vibrated, if you didn't get to hear that in the audio. I don't know if it'll come through. It vibrated.
Yeah.
That's north. Yeah. There.
Yes.
It's like you're getting a text message with your phone in your pocket. It's vibrating when you hit north.
Yeah, it's a vibration, yeah.
He wants it.
Yeah, it's a vibration. That's
It's to be the start of an entirely inbuilt navigation system.
One of the things that we speak about is to end what we call generation screen, which is that thing of walking on the street. Is it this way? Is it that way?
I do a lot of
Should
that.
Where does it?
Which way am I facing? Yeah.
And then you walk on the street because you want to get somewhere, but you have no idea what happened in the world around you because all you did was to stare at that screen. You needed it because you needed to get to that place. But imagine you would not need that and you could navigate the world exactly like a bird and you would know exactly where you need to go all the time. Blind people could navigate. It will connect to the virtual reality world. It will connect to social media. You could sense where.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I agree with that in certain respects. I like the idea of having people wearing glasses with screens on them. If they're going to have screens, might as well just put it right there, but not in the body.
Yeah, that's it.
Keep it outside of the body. But
yeah, I mean, you notice too how difficult the healing process is, that it doesn't quite heal.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's because it's all DIY. And
yeah, but you have the same thing even with the piercings. Like if people get piercings,
yeah,
sometimes they don't heal well or the body's, you know, is rejecting a foreign object, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's learn about the biohacker Rich Lee.
Rich Lee is a 40-year-old cabinet maker from St. George in Utah in the U.S.
So basically I strap this onto my arm and it basically charges my body. It's great for, it's like a taser. Can do fun pranks where I just grab a doorknob and then just wait for somebody to come up and they get electrocuted. I think it's hilarious.
He's got an interesting sense of humor.
Yeah. That's great.
Also, a grinder, a biohacker that does extreme body modification.
So I've got a magnet right here in this finger, right on the side, and then another one in my middle finger right here. On the other side of my hands, I've got a small NFC chip. It's about the size of a grain of rice right here. I've got another NFC chip right here. It's about yay big. Over here, I've got a biofilm chip in my forearm. And then up here, I've got headphone implants right in my tragus. This little bit of cartilage.
What?
Yeah. You didn't see that part?
No.
That you've got right at the front of your ear. See, and I don't know, when I go out to a restaurant or something like that, and I'll just be messing
That's
with
cool.
it at the table.
Practical.
It always captures people's eyes, and they're like, how's he doing that?
Hey, I'm sure you could get some ladies with that trick.
Yeah. Wow. Do you want to learn about CRISPR mods?
Let's hear it.
CRISPR is probably the most extreme and controversial kind of biohacking. It's a technique used by scientists to target and edit your genes. And while scientists are still working out the limits and dangers, Rich is experimenting at home. He says if he gets it wrong, he could kill himself.
We've got all this genetic engineering knowledge. The concept of being able to change your genes or get a genetic modification like you would get a tattoo, that's basically something, that's a world that I'm kind of fighting for. I want to see a biologically fluid society where people can just augment these things.
Lidocaine, if I need to numb myself for a procedure, tons of syringes, intramuscular injections.
Okay, these are fantastic legs.
Damage.
This home experimentation can, of course, go very badly wrong. These are the scars left by one of Rich's failed body hacks, inbuilt shin guards that got so swollen they had to come out again.
And then we had a metal rod that was basically being shoved down the length of my shin and basically separating the tissue from the shin. On the removal, I didn't use any anesthesia.
Oh.
I took out the scissors and cut the stitches and pulled it out with pliers. So that was it.
Jeez.
Wow. It's interesting because he's a cabinet maker in Utah. You wouldn't expect him to have this home lab, but apparently he does. That's pretty cool.
Also, don't try this at home.
Definitely
guys.
Do not try this at home. We got another one, Karina Ingram.
This is Karina, an American events organizer living in Berlin. Her version of biohacking involves a daily ritual of technology and supplements, experimenting on herself to try and keep in peak physical condition.
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. 23. A power plate, and that is an infrared light. The power plate vibrates you anywhere from 30 to 50 times a second.
Oh my god. Oh, the whole room's weird.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it goes all the way down.
But it's your tooth chair.
Wow.
This is a infrared light. So that's really good for pain. It's actually really good for your skin as well. It helps build collagen.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I usually can put the infrared and the power plate together.
Karina keeps her legs bare like this, even outside in freezing cold Berlin. It's her cheap biohack version of cryotherapy, or cold therapy. So these two things are like what you would consider your big biohacks.
Yeah, those are the most tech biohacks. I also eat a ketogenic diet, so that is a high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carbohydrate diet.
Keto. There's a follow-up.
I had an accident, and there was about 40 kilo metal tent that fell on my head and knocked me out. I had a really bad concussion where I was having a hard time walking. I couldn't talk. Anytime I went to talk to somebody, it was like I could say all the words in my head, but when I went to speak, nothing. I was just like. So my boss at the time told me about a specific MCT oil that was called brain octane. And you drink it, and supposedly it's really good for your brain. I drank it, and that day, it's like my brain turned on, and I could actually hold conversation, and I had like, I could form sentences. This is nice. The brain octane oil was like a gateway drug. It was just like, it just opened the floodgates. It's like, if this works, this one little thing works so well, like, what else can I do?
What do you
First of all, who did the camera work on this video?
Yeah, especially with this segment.
I know the guy was shot from head level, and then they shoot her from underneath.
And she's wearing it really short because she keeps her legs bare. Yeah,
I know.
They knew what they were
Jeez.
Doing. I know.
But, I mean, it's interesting. I think people, you know, should be free to do what they want.
Yeah,
it is
absolutely.
Kind of the Wild West out there.
Yeah.
Genesis, when we had him on the show, he kind of dipped into some aspects of this. But again, he's reading papers and
it's all experimental. You're experimenting on yourself.
And, you know, it's cool that she got positive results with that MCT oil, but we don't know how much of that is just placebo effect who knows what other compounding factors.
She should probably try experimenting on herself to figure it out and see if she can eliminate some factors. I don't know. That's what I would do.
I
don't like spending money.
It's still interesting, but I also wonder about the risk of infection, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
All right. Well, the most useful use of the biohacking stuff, the Lovetron 9000.
Finder Rich Lee works on his most ambitious project yet.
Got so many vibration motors, it's not even funny.
The Lovetron 9000, a very long-running plan for a built-in vibrator to be installed under the skin just above the penis, basically designed to turn him into a sex god.
A material that was made to like simulate flesh.
It wasn't too big of a stretch just to say, I'm putting a vibration motor in my body. Why not have one downstairs and become a sex cyborg or something like that?
Yeah.
I've been through so many prototypes. I think I'm on number 10 right now. I was really close to implanting number 7, and right before implantation, I was running for some final tests, and there was just a small switch that broke inside. I estimate that I've sunk maybe $15,000 into it.
Jeez.
Still running into hurdles, but we're getting there. My parents and my kids have been really supportive. You know, some things they just think are kind of gross, but I don't pester them about golf, and they don't pester me about biohacking.
That's a dedication.
Yes, it is. Biohacking. There it is.
Yeah.
We good? I don't know why I didn't put this CNN in front of that. Okay. CNN. E. coli mystery solved. Ground beef is the source of outbreak, CDC says. And Forbes also did something on it, too. Over here, Forbes. How ground beef is the suspected cause of the E. coli outbreak. Ill people in this outbreak report eating ground beef at home or and in restaurants, the CDC said in its outbreak update. No single supplier, distributor, or brand has been identified as the source of the outbreak. Therefore, no recall has been issued, and the CDC is not recommending that consumers avoid ground beef at this time or that restaurants stop serving it. Illnesses are now being reported in 6 states, Georgia, Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, and Indiana. Keep eating ground beef, then, I guess.
Use your meat thermometers.
Keep it up, yep, and use those thermometers.
Cook it to, I think they say 160.
Maybe. Check. Type it into Google. Not you. Everybody else who's listening. All right. Next story. One of our friends in chat actually clued us in on this one. If you have something you'd like us to look into, or you're researching something health related yourself, you'd like to present the information, ask healthytalkshow.com. Get a hold of us. If you know us, get a hold of us. We like talking to people. We want to bring other people on the show and want to expand our minds.
Yeah.
New York Times. What you need to know about Candida iris. New York Times. And a mysterious infection spanning the globe in a climate of secrecy. USA Today. The superbug is a serious global health threat. Here's what you need to know. CDC. General information about Candida iris. I have some videos if you'd like to take a look. Drug-resistant superbug in New York's NBC New York.
Yo, listen, it's hard to identify and hard to treat. Still, doctors say it is spreading very rapidly. Doctors here at Nassau University Medical Center say we need to get this under control before it's too late.
It's a little dramatic.
Deadly drug-resistant fungal infection called Candida auris. The strain of fungus can cause infections in your bloodstream, ears, and any wounds. According to the Center for Disease Control, the fungus is becoming more common. There have been 587 cases across the country, and 414 have come from the tri-state area. New York leads all states with 300.
Okay, make note, everybody.
Yeah, don't go there.
109 cases of the fungus. With 104 cases, New Jersey comes in as number 3, right behind Illinois.
Okay.
Trying to identify people coming in with it and then being very aggressive once it's identified in containing that infection and limiting spread.
However, the fungus is hard to identify because testing must be done in a specialized laboratory.
Cool.
Not. I think more they it has to be grown and then they yes. have to identify it by eye. So it just takes a while.
Who is it a concern for?
It is going to be a concern, particularly for the groups of persons that are at risk to have serious invasive infections. And those tend to be people who've been hospitalized, who have other comorbidities like diabetes, immunosuppression, malignancies.
So the big question now, what can we be doing to prevent this? Doctor says 3 things. Number 1, wash your hands often. Number 2, don't overuse any antibiotics. And number 3, keep the environment clean. For now.
It's good advice across the board.
What a, Of course, the problem with the Canada Oris is just how invasive it is.
Yeah. And I have a little bit. Candida auris is a fungus that, when it gets into the bloodstream, can cause dangerous infections that can be life-threatening. Scientists first identified it in 2009 in a patient in Japan. It is often resistant to major antifungal drugs that are typically used to treat such infections. The CDC says that more than 90% of infections are resistant to at least one such drug, while 30% have resistance to two or more major drugs. Once a germ is present, it is hard to eradicate from a facility. Some hospitals have to had bring in special cleaning equipment, even rip out floor and ceiling tiles to get rid of it. So it's persistent. Yeah, it's persistent.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. That they have to rip yes. out the tiles. They can't just bleach this down.
It reminds me of that. Oh, I should have pulled a clip from the Mario Brothers movie, the fungus that's taking over the whole city. Yeah. Everybody, if you've seen that movie, you know what I'm talking about. Sorry, that's crazy. I did not bring a clip. I'm so sorry. I'm a horrible person.
Also, for what it's worth, I think the number of measles cases is almost the same as the number of Canada Aura cases, because they're both around 500.
Ooh, so is it a state of emergency?
I don't know.
Do we need to get the flamethrowers out and destroy this fungus that's spreading across the city and taking over New York?
I think measles is at least easier to treat than this thing. You have to burn your house down to get Canada
Aura. I know, exactly.
But... yeah, it's kind of scary, but it is only affecting at least the immunocompromised, I believe.
Yep, and we'll see. It's developing. I'm sure we'll follow up and we'll get some more reports if it starts to spread more. CNN, ingredient in whitening strips is harmful to deep layer of teeth, research says. I'm going to recut that. CNN, ingredient in whitening strips is harmful to deep layer of teeth, research says. Daily Mail. Teeth whitening products containing hydrogen peroxide can damage the tissue underneath and make them weaker. Science Daily, teeth whitening products can harm protein-rich tooth layer. In three new studies, researchers found that hydrogen peroxide, the active ingredient in over-the-counter whitening strips, can damage the protein-rich dentin tissue found beneath the tooth's protective enamel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, part of me was a little confused about what was so novel about this, since dentists have been warning about the risks of, you know, teeth whitening.
At the take-home ones.
But.
Especially.
You know, at the same time, this was a pretty well-done study. They took teeth samples, they simulated the environment mm-hmm. of the mouth, and then simulated some being teeth whitened and some not, and compared the levels of collagen before and after. And, yeah, they did find that the hydrogen peroxide gets deep into the tooth, so.
Yep. And here's a clip. NBC2 News. Whitening strips could be harmful to your teeth.
Well, your teeth are made up of three layers. The outside layer is enamel. You're probably the most...
I don't know why the audio's out of sync on his lips. That's their video.
...familiar with that one. But this study says the whitening strips can go right through that enamel and cause damage to the deeper part of your teeth.
But some researchers say it's what you can't see that could hurt you. Hydrogen peroxide is the active ingredient in whitening strips. A new study found the chemical was able to penetrate through the outer layer of enamel and reach the inner layer of dentin. Researchers say their results showed the chemical can make the original collagen protein in the dentin layer disappear. But Naples dentist Dr. Richard Linden is skeptical.
I think more research is needed to determine whether the changes in the dentin are temporary or permanent.
Researchers used extracted teeth. Dr. Linden says your collagen is continuously replaced. Unlike extracted teeth, the human body repairs itself.
If you've ever had a tooth worked on, filling done, it was a little sore for a while and then that soreness went away, it's a perfect example of how your tooth heals itself.
Since the research is still in its early...
And the researchers actually address that. Yeah. They say they point out their experience did not address whether collagen and other proteins in the teeth can be regenerated, so it is unknown if tooth damage is permanent. Why do people want such white teeth? That's the question I ask.
I blame social media or media.
It's just, why gotta do they look need good, to be ridiculously gotta be perfect. White? Why?
I don't know. That's the conventional norms.
Yeah. CNN. The most active ingredient in hand sanitizer is still under FDA investigation. At this time, three active ingredients, benzocolonium chloride, ethyl alcohol, and isopropanol alcohol, are being deferred from further rulemaking to allow for ongoing study and submission of additional safety and effectiveness data necessary to make the determination whether these active ingredients are generally recognized as safe and effective for use, the FDA announcement said. I have a clip.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration rules that dozens of active ingredients cannot be used in the antiseptic rubs. But the agency still wants answers about the most common active ingredient, ethyl alcohol, and two other ingredients. The status of those ingredients will be addressed either after completion.
What's your take?
What? they're talking about ethanol. And we drink ethanol.
Yep.
So I'm really confused why they're continuing to study it. And what is the alternative? Because what's great about alcohol is it just disrupts the outer cell wall, essentially the bacteria, and then destroys it. So that's a lot less harmful to you than other methods of antibacterial.
What are other methods that people would be using, say, like mouthwash or something?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because one of those is silver.
Mm-hmm.
So silver does have antibacterial properties, but people are becoming worried about the use of silver because the silver works by binding to the DNA and disrupting the DNA. So
my sister made homemade mouthwash and said, alcohol-free mouthwash loaded with silver.
Basically.
Oh, okay. So, well, there you go.
You know,
sister,
once
if you're listening, there you go. HealthyTalkShow.com/support.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off.
It's just unknown, you know, what that silver is going to do in the body over time.
Yep.
And how much DNA damage it could potentially do. But I endorse ethanol.
Ethanol. At least we think it's safe. We don't know anything for sure.
It's true, but I don't know what else we would use.
I know.
Not ethanol. That's exactly. Kind of the problem.
Yep. CNN, widow of Arthur Sackler says her husband shouldn't be blamed for the opioid crisis. And then New York Times, opioid sales reps swarm New York at the height of a crisis. In her op-ed, Jillian Sackler wrote that it's understandable to seek justice and restitution for the terrible consequences of the opioid crisis, and that she is in full support of using settlement funds for creating opioid addiction treatment centers. This is in reference to the $270 million settlement announced last month in a lawsuit brought by Oklahoma's Attorney General accusing Purdue Pharma of aggressively marketing an addictive painkiller and fueling a drug epidemic that left thousands dead in the state. She also points out that Arthur has not been named in any of the lawsuits against Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family. And Purdue Pharma's sales force swept through New York State, visiting doctors and pharmacies nearly 500,000 times between 2006 and 2017 to promote OxyContin and other opioid painkillers. That is roughly 160 cell stops in each state weekday during the height of the nation's addiction crisis. The company's flood the zone sales strategy was among new disclosures contained in the court papers filed on Tuesday by Attorney General Letitia James of New York and its past part of the office's lawsuit against opioid manufacturers, distributors, and eight members of the Sackler family who control Purdue. And...
I mean, it seems, I guess I'm not quite sure when he got blamed for it since he died before all this.
I think she's just trying to
save the name.
Yeah. Because now the name is going to go down real quick.
Well, that's true because it's associated with a lot of funds. Mm-hmm. But
Science Daily, opioid epidemic may have cost U.S. government's $37.8 billion in tax revenue. The opioid epidemic may have cost U.S. state and federal governments up to $37.8 billion in lost tax revenue due to an opioid-related employment loss, according to Penn State researchers. Ooh. Additionally, the researchers found that Pennsylvania was one of the states with the most lost revenue, with approximately $638.2 million lost to income and sales tax. The study looked at data between 2000 and 2016. This is a cost that was... maybe not thought about as explicitly before, and a cost that governments could potentially try to recoup, Siegel said. Instead of focusing on the cost of treating people with the opioid use disorder, you could think about it in terms of potential benefit to getting people healthy, back on their feet, and back in the workforce.
It's a very pragmatic way to look at it.
Yes.
At the opioid crisis.
It did cost money, though.
Yeah.
Addicts cost money. It costs tax dollars. So.
But it's a much cheaper short-term solution to just ship them somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead of trying to invest a little bit and actually help these people. But.
Yep. Capitalism. Science Daily. Want to quit smoking? Partner up. This study evaluated the supporting role married or cohabiting partners might have in quitting smoking. The study enrolled 222 current smokers who were at high risk of cardiovascular disease or who had suffered a heart attack. Partners were also recruited. 99 were current smokers, 45%, 40 ex-smokers, and 83 never smokers. Couples attended one of four preventative cardiology programs. At the start, they were asked about the current smoking status, history of smoking, and previous quit attempts. Smoking status was verified with a carbon monoxide breath test. During the 16-week program, couples were offered nicotine replacement therapy with patches and gum. In one program, participants could choose the prescription drug Varenicline instead. At the end of the program, 64% of patients and 75% of partners were abstinent, compared to none and 55% at the start, respectively. The odds of quitting smoking at 16 weeks were significantly higher, 5.83-fold, in couples who tried to quit together compared to patients who attempted it alone.
I mean, makes sense.
Yeah.
From, you know, the people that I know that are smokers, either both people have to be on board or it's really difficult because the temptation's too much.
Same with a lot of things. Diet, too. Yeah. Partners dieting together are usually going to be more successful because it's a common goal.
Well, people have come to you with relationship issues,
absolutely.
Actually.
I've had coworkers or ex-coworkers come to me and tell me, you know, my partner doesn't want to diet with me. How did you get your partner on board? Or it's so great that you're on board with your partner and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It was, man, it's.
Also, if you need relationship advice,
ask healthytalkshow.com, please.
We want to start exploring that more.
Yes. In the chat room, we're talking about weed. Hold on. New York Times. Rite Aid to stop selling e-cigarettes, citing surge in young users. Rite Aid said Thursday they would remove the products from its more than 2,400 stores over the next 90 days. The chain will continue to sell regular tobacco products, a decision that some public health advocates criticized. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that the use of tobacco products, a category that includes e-cigarettes and vaping products, jumped 38% last year among high school students and 29% among middle school students. The vape continues on.
I mean, that seems good.
Yeah. Forbes, Rite Aid to sell CBD amid CEO search and pharmacy pressure. And Forbes again, drugstore chains have turned to CBD sales amid prescription reimbursement pressures. News that Rite Aid will test the sale of CBD products in two states on the West Coast is the latest move by the big drugstore chains to tap an emerging market of the compound derived from cannabis. Rite Aid's pilot of CBD sales follows similar tests disclosed in just the last month by CVS Health and Walgreens Boots Alliance, which are all seeing intensifying reimbursement pressures for prescription drugs. Pharmacies are receiving less money for filling prescriptions as prices for generic drugs have dropped. Walgreens said it is offering CBD products in nearly 1,500 stores in Oregon, Colorado, New Mexico, Kentucky, Tennessee, Vermont, South Carolina, Illinois, and Indiana. CVS began selling CBD products in select stores in California, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Maryland, Tennessee. These stores will be carrying topicals like cream, sprays, roll-ons, and lotions.
Man, everyone wants to get in on the CBD thing now.
It's funny that they're having issues with big pharma, essentially, and they're going to weed.
Yeah.
That's what I'm reading. That's a lot of people's issues. That's why they try marijuana, is because they're having issues with the prescription drugs. The costs are too high, the weird side effects. And now even Rite Aid and Walgreens are saying, hey, CBD might be okay.
I mean, give the people what they want, right?
Exactly. Let's go buy stuff from Rite Aid and Walgreens. Let's go buy CBD-infused products. They're not going to do edibles or anything, though. Just topicals. Yep. Science Daily. Marijuana for morning sickness. It's not great for a baby's brain. Previous research has shown children born to mothers who use marijuana during pregnancy are more likely to develop behavioral problems as well as learning and memory impairments. This new research offers further confirmation on those findings and pinpoints how the drug alters the intricate connections in nerves and the hippocampus, the brain's center for learning and memory. The research team raised several groups of rats and exposed some of the females to a synthetic chemical that activates the same proteins as cannabis while they were pregnant. They used a dose equivalent to moderate to heavy marijuana use in humans. Examining the brains of the baby rats, they found the connections or synapses between the nerves and the hippocampus were reduced in those exposed to the synthetic cannabis. Upon further examination, the evidence that the root of the problem was a reduction in neural cell adhesion molecules, a protein important for maintaining proper neural connection and synaptic strength. The findings suggest that it may be possible to counteract marijuana's effects by increasing the NCAM, though more research is needed to understand the mechanisms involved and determine whether the findings from the studies animals would translate to human babies.
Just stay away from the marijuana.
Yeah, I want to be clear. Just because kids might be watching Healthy Talk Show, and I talk a lot about cannabis, kids should not use cannabis.
Yeah.
I don't think they should. You.
Yeah, your brains are still developing.
Developing is the... I have a lot of issues. It, do not mess with the development of the brain, the body, yeah. Nothing. So I think 18... Well, legally, a lot of states, I think California yeah. is 21, so you can't even smoke if you're 18. So
and your brain is still developing when you're
yes.
in your early 20s. So yes. wait till the legal age.
Yep.
Let those synapses form.
Yes. Seriously. I did not yeah. start consuming cannabis until I was 30. That was a year ago. Maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But that was the first time ever. I never did it before that. Hey, I'm serious.
He had to develop his brain.
Yes, I had to develop my brain.
Very important.
It's very important to develop the brain. The brain yeah. is very important.
We seriously, need
to develop
though.
It. Kids, seriously.
No
stay joke. Away from that stuff. I'm a big... For adults, it's completely fine. Because, you know, when you, once you hit 21, it's all downhill anyways.
Don't say that.
New York Times, Native American women are facing a crisis. Native American women and girls are facing an epidemic of violence. They are being killed or trafficked at rates higher than the rest of the U.S. population. On some reservations, women are 10 times as likely to be murdered as the national average, according to the Justice Department. Some simply disappear, presumably forced into sex trafficking. These cases all often go unsolved. Now three senators are hoping to combat this epidemic. The bipartisan bill called the Not Invisible Act of 2019 was introduced last week, aims to change what the Indian Law Resource Center has called lack of diligent, adequate federal response to these crimes. The bill would create an advisory committee of local tribal and federal stakeholders to devise the best practices to combat the problem and make recommendations to government. Efforts would include paving the way for federal agencies, law enforcement, elected tribal officials to collaborate more easily. Some scattershot data on this serious issue includes 84% of indigenous women have experienced physical, sexual, or psychological violence in their lifetime, according to the National Institute of Justice. 1 in 3 Native American women have been raped or experienced an attempted rape, according to the Justice Department, more than twice the national average. 13% of sexual assaults reported by Native American women result in arrest, according to the Justice Department, compared to with 35% for black women and 32% for white women. 506 indigenous women and girls who have disappeared or been killed in 71 urban American cities in 2016, according to a November report by Urban Indian Health Institute. 2016, 5,712 indigenous women and girls were reported missing, but only 116 were logged by the U.S. Department of Justice's Federal Missing Persons Database, according to the National Crime Information Center. That was a lot to say.
Man, that's horrible.
Yes. And I know there are a lot of issues with the tribes, speaking locally, with work cooperating with governments just because of history and all that. It's interesting. There's... that yeah.
I mean the women too, we need to come together and support each other.
Yes. This going missing and
yeah, this is horrible.
This sex trafficking seems just, to be more and more prevalent. Something we're gonna be looking into from
yeah. We definitely need to
stay safe and healthy perspective.
Look more into this and figure out what's causing it and just support one another as women.
Yes.
And people.
Allies.
Too.
Allies. We all unite.
Yes.
Please. Forbes, FemBeat. Is vaginal health still a taboo in business? The word vagina is either medicalized or sexualized in today's world, and it's certainly not a popular term in Silicon Valley. Yet, startups in the femtech space are starting to use it more openly in their pitches and marketing outreach. While women are often deemed hysterical and irrational, it seems like it's more the men who need some hormonal adjustment, according to the writer. These testosterone-filled VCs, who happen to handle hundreds of millions of dollars in committed capital, are known for their dislike of the word vagina, making it harder for female-first startups to raise money. VCs aren't the only ones shying away from the word, however. Tech giants like Facebook also shown an inherent bias when it comes to their ad policies. As an example, the writer did a little experiment. Femtech brands had their ads banned and removed for using the word related to vagina, vaginal, vaginosis, mucus, while ads using terms sperm and condoms were left untouched, says the writer. Great, interesting piece.
Why are people so afraid of the word vagina?
I have no idea. I don't understand that.
That's one of our goals on Healthy Talk Show.
Bring it back.
But another interesting thing, too, is there is a market for these products, because they mentioned how on Kickstarter they were able to raise lots of money, and lots of the female-led campaigns have been very successful on there.
Yep.
So why aren't these venture capitalists acknowledging that there's a market?
That is... the question. I'm sorry, I'm looking for a clip that I forgot to put in.
Oh, no worries.
And I don't have it. Dang it. I'm very upset about this. It was about the South Korea thing. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're rolling.
The only other thing that I was disappointed about was they had vagina shirts, but they're, I think, $40.
That's very expensive.
We all need vagina shirts.
But not for that much money. CNN, South Korea to legalize abortion after 66-year ban. I had a clip, but I lost it. South Korea's 66-year abortion ban must be lifted by the end of 2020. The country's constitutional court ruled Thursday. 7 out of 9 judges ruled that outlawing abortion was unconstitutional. Votes from 6 judges were needed to overturn the ban. Lawmakers now have until December 30th, 2020 to revise the law. Termination of pregnancy after 20 weeks will remain illegal. Previously, women who had abortions in South Korea could face up to a year in prison and can be fined up to 2 million won. Don't worry, it's only $1,700. While doctors or health correct workers who help terminate pregnancy could be jailed for up to 2 years. Oh, sheesh.
Wow.
So that's good. South Korea, finally, you know.
Yeah. So something else I didn't realize that South Korea also had government campaigns to reduce the number of children per household.
Ooh.
I guess similar to the China's policies.
I think, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, but same with the Chinese, the South Korean culture, they favor the males, so the females' children were getting aborted secretly. So, issues there.
Yes. Wow.
But that's good in terms of female reproductive rights. So, vagina.
Absolutely. Vagina rights, right? Is that what
vagina it is? Rights. That's vagina what we got to start saying. We got to normalize vagina.
Oh, no. LBTalkShow.com/support. Help us normalize vagina. New York Times. Living near a major highway tied to developmental delays in children. Science Direct. There's the study. Prenatal and early life exposures to ambient air pollution and development. Going back to New York Times. Researchers studied 5,825 children living in New York State outside of New York City. The study summary said 4,089 singletons and 1,016 twins born between 2008 and 2010, which adds up to 5,105. So one of the numbers is askew. I caught that when I was adding some numbers there, Marissa.
Dang.
Dang. Typos. I'm exposing the corruption.
I know.
Parents periodically filled out a well-validated questionnaire that tracks developmental milestones in children from age 8 months to 3 years. Milestones encompass physical, verbal, and social domains. They calculated the proximity of the children's addresses to interstates and state highways using data from New York Department of Transportation, estimated air pollution exposures using federal government data. After controlling for maternal age, race, smoking, birth weight, and many other factors, they found that compared with children living more than 1,000 meters away from a highway, those living within 500 meters were twice as likely to fail in the verbal and nonverbal communication domain. The association was slimmer with other developmental domains, but did not reach statistical significance.
It seems like it was done well, but I still have some questions because 1,000 meters versus 500 meters doesn't seem very far.
It's not that far.
And when you're talking about pollution, I mean, you can travel really far and everywhere. And once you start thinking about pollution, too, you have to think about how long these species live and where they're traveling, the wind patterns, where they tend to settle. But, I mean, still interesting. I don't think anybody thinks that pollution is good for you, though.
No, I think we can all agree that pollution's bad. That's Science Daily. Millions of children worldwide develop asthma annually due to traffic-related pollution. The researchers linked global data sets of nitrogen dioxide, NO2 concentrations, pediatric population distributions, and asthma incident rates with epidemiological evidence relating to traffic-derived NO2 pollution with asthma development in kids. They were then able to estimate the number of new pediatric asthma cases attributable to NO2 pollution in 194 countries and 125 major cities worldwide. Key findings from the study published in The Lancet Planetary Health: an estimated 4 million children develop asthma each year from 2010 to 2015 due to exposure to nitrogen dioxide, which primarily comes from motor vehicle exhaust. An estimated 13% of annual pediatric asthma incidents worldwide was linked to NO2 pollution. Among the 125 cities, NO2 accounted for 6% to 48%. Shanghai, China, pediatric asthma incidents. The top 10 highest NO2 contributors were estimated for 8 cities in China, 37 to 48%. Moscow, Russia, and Seoul, South Korea at 40%. Wow, that's weird. Problem affects cities in the United States as well. Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Las Vegas, Milwaukee were the top 5 cities in the U.S. Nationally, the largest burdens related to air pollution were found in China, 760,000 cases of asthma per year, followed by India, 350,000, and the United States, 240,000.
Yeah, so China and India topping that list, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't surprising.
They're the biggest polluters.
Yeah.
By far.
Well, India's been ramping up their coal burning, yep, too, since they're really becoming industrialized, yep, and coal is cheap. Coal is
cheap and it's effective. It does the job.
But
at what cost?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is, even if we lessen our impact today, India and China are still going to be burning. Yeah. So
they're not lessening theirs. Inverse. Ketamine study reveals how to make an even better depression treatment. Science Daily. Ketamine reverses neural changes underlying depression-related behaviors in mice. ScienceMag.org. Sustained rescue. Prefrontal circuit dysfunction by antidepressant-induced spine formation. And then Mashable. Can ketamine cure your depression? We have a video. But first, researchers have identified ketamine-induced brain-related changes responsible for maintaining the remission of behaviors related to depression in mice. Ketamine treatment restored lost dendritic spines and rescued coordinated neural activity in the prefrontal cortex of the mice, findings that may help researchers develop interventions that promote lasting remission of depression in mice. What'd you think?
Let's see the video.
Oh, I can. I could cue it up. We have about the ketamine.
Six. Well, my name is Steven. I am a ketamine patient. I use it for pain and depression. I do both IV ketamine infusions and I do nasal spray.
I'm Dr. Steve Levine. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist and I'm the founder of Actify Neurotherapies. Ketamine is a really old medicine. It was first developed way back in 1962. It's used in trauma settings on battlefields. It had cut its teeth during the Vietnam War. It's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines. It's used for pain control. It's used all the time for children, especially in emergency departments as a short procedural anesthetic. A sliver of its use, a very small fraction, has been its role as Special K, a drug of abuse.
And of course, great
because
marketing,
that's the
guy.
Grabbier, sexier headline.
Yes.
It's the reputation associated with it in most people's minds.
And the music in the background.
Yeah.
It's great.
But that's a very, very small percentage of how it's used around the world every day, which is as a life-saving anesthetic and pain medication.
Very interesting. So this video covers Steven, and we're going to actually, what has he done to help his depression?
So they had put me on Opana, which is an extremely strong opioid, and fentanyl patches. The side effects were horrendous. You know, you're always nauseous, you're always tired. For depression, I've used basically everything, and the side effects for that are just like any SNRI or SSRI, which is like lethargy, weight gain, you know, there's sexual side effects, there's nausea. I'm extraordinarily thankful I didn't become addicted because they're very addictive substances.
They are.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things, the dose makes the poison.
Yep.
And you can argue too, I mean, if we want to talk about drugs, meth was used back in the day,
mm-hmm,
as asthma treatments and
yeah,
all sorts of things, but now it has a bad reputation. So now they're kind of flipping the ketamine story a little.
Which is very interesting.
It's interesting.
Brain images on ketamine.
And something we know with depression now is that this is a condition where there is brain harm. There's actual structural change. So when people say depression is all in your head, they're kind of right, but you can measure it. In the before pictures, you see these branches, which are the neurons. It looks like a branch in late fall. After ketamine, it looks like late spring, early summer, because all these new little connections start to bud off of them. And it's really quite remarkable.
This guy shows great marketing skills.
Yeah.
It's spring,
yeah,
it's happy.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, it does show some promise for people. So.
Absolutely. And this mouse study does the same thing. ketamine infusion.
Start off with treatments close together, and then we start to spread them apart towards a maintenance period where we try to give them as infrequently as possible.
They front load 60 milligrams of ketamine into just directly into my vein, basically, which just knocks me out. When I wake up a couple minutes later, there's a ketamine drip that goes for about 40 minutes. It's hallucinogenic.
Oh, I bet it is.
And it makes you pretty introspective.
It's a dissociative experience. And what that means is that there's a sense of disconnection of mind from body. You know, sensations are more intense. And so colors might be brighter or richer, might look kind of psychedelic. They're very sensitive to stimuli in the environment.
Robert, where's your bong?
You start thinking about like very odd things that you would never normally think about that seem to actually be like healthy ways of working through whatever's going on. Physically, you're not moving or really responding. You're not even sure if you're talking because they'll come in, the doctor will come in and say, is everything going okay? And you'll be like, I think so. But you don't really know if you're speaking or not. And then afterwards, it's just recovering. It takes a little while to get out of your system and makes you feel a little funky for a little while, like a little wobbly and sort of like drunk.
Now we have one more clip, but I just want to make it clear we're making fun of this, but we think this is actually really cool.
Yeah.
This is super cool. I'm totally for this.
I mean, the only reason why we're making fun of it, though, is because psychedelics get such a bad name.
Yeah.
Shrooms.
And now everyone's coming around saying, yeah, man, let's try out the ayahuasca, the peyote, the LSD. Let's try all these things out.
People are making fun of stoners like, oh, man, I'm thinking. But
there it is.
The hypocrisy, man.
Mashable, last one. Can ketamine cure depression? What's the price?
Infusion costs between $500 and $800. The nasal spray I use is $115 a month.
At our centers, we have 9 around the country. We charge different prices at different centers, but on average, it's about $450 per treatment, which is expensive. Yeah. Esketamine was FDA approved for depression, for treatment-resistant depression, on March the 5th. So just a couple of weeks ago. Ketamine is a mixture of S-ketamine and R-ketamine. They are mirror images. The only thing that differentiates them is the direction that they spin in space. Theoretically, S-ketamine is the half...
Looks very science-y. That's why I left it in here.
Yeah, but that was completely wrong. They don't spin in different directions in space. They're different just orientations.
Different orientations.
They're a different molecule. They bind differently.
Ooh.
Sorry, he triggered me for a second.
Such a salesman strike.
Molecule that has the strongest antidepressant potential. Ultimately, realistically, S-ketamine is no different from ketamine.
Is that true? S-ketamine is no different from ketamine?
Not really.
That's not a factual statement.
No.
Because they are different.
If you want to talk about enantiomers and mirror images being the same, let's go back and talk about this anti-nausea drug that was developed. And it turned out that one enantiomer was toxic and the other was useful. And they didn't realize that and mixed both enantiomers in at the time. So, So they reacted.
To FDA approve nasal S-ketamine as opposed to IV regular ketamine, what's called racemic ketamine, is purely a business decision.
S-ketamine, which they just released, does have, you know, prescription discount cards, things like that. But it's a much more expensive drug.
There it is. Well, business majors can't trust them when they explain ketamine, apparently.
And if you... Maybe I think you got confused too with the optical rotation because different enantiomers have different optical rotation, which means they rotate light differently and polarize light. But yeah, he made it sound like they would only spin in one way, kind of like my dog only spins in one direction.
Your dog only spins one way.
That's true. Anyways, moving on.
Forbes. Why more kids are going to the ER for swallowing objects. A study published in Pediatrics showed that the rate of young kids going to emergency departments for swallowing non-food items more than doubled from 1995 to 2015. They performed a retrospective analysis using data from the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System for children less than 6 years of age who were treated because of concern of foreign body ingestion, from 1995 to 2015. National estimates were generated from 29,893 actual cases reviewed. Here are the most common objects swallowed. Coins, 61.7%. Toys, 10.3%. Jewelry, 7%. Batteries, 6.8%. Kids.
Yeah, well, this study basically answered my question and my hypothesis. Because my initial thought was this is probably increasing because people are on the smartphones. Mm-hmm.
Don't pay attention to their children.
And that Absolutely. Was exactly their thought as well. Yep. And they based it off of the coins since, you know, we should still have roughly the same amount of coins available, but people are swallowing them at increased rates. So maybe we should put down the phones and look at our children.
Yeah. Or
don't have kids.
Don't say that. Who uses coins nowadays from the chat? Great point.
Well, apparently kids are swallowing them.
They use coins still. The kids are not in for the cashless.
Yeah, the kids
don't have credit cards yet. If they did, they'd probably think about it. Yeah, swiping.
Or tapping now.
Tap to pay. Fancy at Costco. CDC, stay healthy at animal exhibits. Eureka alert, petting zoos could potentially transmit highly virulent drug-resistant bacteria to visitors. The researchers did a study across 8 randomly chosen petting zoos geographically distributed throughout Israel, taking samples of fecal matter as well as from the body's surface, skin, fur, or feathers. From 220 animals belonging to 42 different species, genetic sequencing was used to identify both species of bacteria in each sample and the presence of ESBL and AMPC drug resistance genes. In total, 382 samples were collected from 220 animals, and 12% of the animals were found to be colonized with at least one ESBL AMPC producing bacterial strain with 35 different recovered species of bacteria. The majority, 77% of the MDR bacteria, were obtained from feces, with the remaining 23% coming from skin, fur, or feathers. Analysis of data revealed that if an animal was treated with antibiotics, it was 7 times more likely to shed MDR bacteria. The study found that petting zoos provide a reservoir for a diverse range of ESBL MCE species and are a potential source of shedding highly virulent pathogens that may be transmitted to humans. Lots of hand washing. If you listen to the CDC, that's what they recommend. Yeah. A lot of hand washing and stay safe at those petting zoos, everybody.
I mean, was anyone really surprised, though?
Yeah, it's, you know, where are the sanitizer stations? A lot of them have sanitizing stations, hand washing stations, definitely. Touch an animal, go wash your hands.
But this also goes back to where, you know, we do have an overuse of antibiotics, especially in commercial farming where the animals are closer together.
The issue is with the food, the farming that we're eating.
Yeah.
The cattle, that's.
But it does also
It does translate.
You know, more resistance. And we've mentioned several times on the show how if we continue to overuse these antibiotics, we're going to get more and more resistant strains of bacteria or yeast.
Yep. So be careful.
Wash your hands.
And don't use antibiotics unless you need to. And take the full regimen if a doctor prescribes them. New York Times, choose foods, not supplements. Annals of Internal Medicine, association among dietary supplement use, nutrient intake, and mortality among U.S. adults in a cohort study. In a study of Annals of Internal Medicine, scientists gathered dietary information repeated in persons interviews with almost 31,000 men and women, 20 and older. Over 6 years, there were 3,613 deaths, including 945 from cardiovascular disease and 805 from cancer. Overall, after adjustment from health and other behavioral characteristics, they found that using any dietary supplements had no effect on mortality. Adequate intakes of vitamin A and K, magnesium, zinc, and copper are associated with reductions in all causes of mortality, but only when substances came from food, not supplements. Taking 1,000 or more milligrams of calcium a day was associated with an increased risk for death from cancer, and vitamin D supplement in doses above 400 international unit, IU, a day were associated with an increased cancer death and death from any cause. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean,
there's always a debate on the vitamins.
I was just going to say there's a few issues with vitamins. And so this was a recall study. So you don't know exactly what brand they're taking. Is that brand good? And vitamins vary, you know, from brand to brand, and they're not really regulated.
Yeah.
Sorry, I kind of cut you off.
No, you're fine.
What were you going to say?
I have no idea.
I mean, we take vitamins. Oh,
yes, we do, because we feel that it's better to at least try to get that stuff in your body, because there's no way I can naturally eat all the, I can't eat all the vitamins that I need. There's no way.
Yeah, I mean, we try to be diverse in our foods, but
absolutely do.
We need to be more. Plus, I mean, go to your doctor. Your doctor can also test you for vitamin deficiencies, mm-hmm. so you might need a supplement if you find that you are. But so that might be another factor. Me personally, I'm celiac, so I know that I already have issues with absorbing enough nutrients, so I'm going to take my multivitamin even if it may not help.
Hey, you know what? Placebo effects, I'm just as crazy.
Yeah.
We take a vitamin regimen. We don't know if it's working. We don't.
Yeah.
We don't think too much on it.
It is a difficult thing to study, but there's also the factors. So people that do take vitamins, maybe they are more health conscious. So there's a lot of factors.
Yep. New York Times, very low cholesterol may increase stroke risk. Science Daily, low cholesterol linked to higher risk of bleeding stroke in women. Researchers found that very low LDL or bad cholesterol and very low triglycerides are associated with an increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke, the type caused by a ruptured blood vessel in the brain. For the report, neurology researchers reviewed data on total cholesterol, LDL, HDL, good cholesterol, and triglycerides for 27,937 women. During an average follow-up of 19 years, there were 137 hemorrhagic strokes. Why do I have such a hard time? They found that women with LDL levels below 70 or more than twice as likely to have hemorrhagic strokes as those with readings between 100 and 129. Under 100 is generally considered normal. Women with triglyceride readings below 75 had twice the risk for stroke compared to those levels above 156. A triglyceride level below 150 is considered healthy. There was no association of stroke with HDL or total cholesterol. This study is controlled for hypertension, smoking, physical activity, mass index, and other factors.
So, key takeaway, you kind of want to be somewhere in the middle. You don't want your cholesterol to be too low or too high.
Find the balance.
I thought that was pretty interesting too. They commented on why they thought this was the case, and they said that low cholesterol may result in arterial medial layer smooth muscle cell necrosis. So, and that this may make the endothelium more susceptible to aneurysms. So I thought that was interesting.
Very interesting. Cool study. New York Times, eat meat, live longer. AJCN, I don't know what that stands for. The American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, dietary proteins and protein sources and risk of death. Scientists gathered dietary and health data on 2,641 Finnish men ages 42 to 60, following them for an average of 22 years. Over the course of the study, 1,225 of them died. Compared with men who ate less than 2.6 ounces or 76 grams of meat a day, red meat, white meat, or organ meat combined, those who ate more than half a pound, 250 grams daily, were 23% more likely to die. Higher intakes of protein were not significantly associated with an increased risk of premature death, except among those with serious disease. And consumption of protein in fish, eggs, dietary food, and plants did not affect mortality. But the researchers found that the higher the ratio of meat protein to plant protein, the greater the risk of early death.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they didn't quite deconvolute all the factors. So previous studies have indicated that processed meats may be more harmful, and red meats have also kind of gotten a bad rep.
Yeah.
But they didn't really deconvolute exactly what meats they were consuming, or maybe they were consuming a lot of nitrates.
Mm.
But
it's a fine line. Because vegetarian, those aren't necessarily healthy diets either.
Yeah, and we just talked about low cholesterol, so you do need...
Yeah.
That low cholesterol was bad, so everything in moderation.
Yep. Science Daily. Move more to live longer. Improving fitness doesn't require doing activities you don't like. That's the main message of research presented today at the Europe Prevent 2019, the largest study of date of cardiorespiratory fitness, and healthy people found that moving more is linked to living longer, regardless of age, sex, and starting fitness level. For most people, just being more active in daily life, taking the stairs, exiting the metro station early, cycling to work, is enough to benefit health since levels are so low to start with. The more you do, the better.
Yes.
Small steps.
And they They said even it doesn't matter where you're starting, and if you start lower, so no activity, then the benefits are even greater.
Exactly.
Faster.
Yes.
And so park a little bit farther, take the stairs. Every little bit helps.
Yes. When you're at Disneyland, don't take the little tram thing that takes you to the front of the gate. What you do is you get in your car and leave. No, I'm just kidding. Walk. There's a way to walk there.
Yeah.
There's a way to walk.
You actually showed me that.
Yeah. A little secret. Sometimes get there faster because there are a lot of people taking that tram. Science Daily. Ability to lift weights quickly can mean a longer life. Prolong your life by increasing your muscle power. That's the main message of a study presented today at EuroPrevent 2019. Muscle power gradually decreases after 40 years of age. We now show that power is strongly related to all cause of mortality. But the good news is that you only need to be above the median for your sex to have the above median for your sex to have the best survival, with no further benefit in becoming even more powerful, said Professor Jill Aguilio, Director of Research and Education, Exercise Medicine Clinic, Clinimex, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to what we were saying.
And this also ties back to what we were talking about, healthy aging, with Genesis, how he was talking about you want to lift just light to moderate weights. So you don't have to go crazy bodybuilding. He said that that was bad for aging. But
I would also make that argument that it is bad. Extreme bodybuilding, getting old, it's not healthy.
Yeah, but again, small efforts, light
Everybody
weights.
Can do it, yep. Sit at your desk, just start pumping, little 2 pounders, just start going at it. Do it.
Hey, Five Below has those nice light weights.
Nice light weights of Five Below. They also have great shirts.
Yeah.
Science Daily. Most adults dying prematurely of natural causes did not seek medical help. Report reveals about 2/3 of adults dying prematurely from natural causes did not seek medical help within 30 days preceding their death, reported forensic researchers from the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston, UT Health, and the Harris County Institute of Forensic Sciences, IFS. The research published recently in PLOS One discovered key factors relating to premature adult deaths by analyzing autopsy reports and death investigation records of 1,282 people between the ages of 25 and 59 who died in Harris County in 2013. Of the 1,282 records reviewed, the team found 912 deaths were due to natural causes and 307 to drug overdoses. Stacy Drake, PhD, MPHRN, who is the lead author of the study and is now the assistant professor at Sizek School of Nursing at UT Health, said it is disheartening to find that 70% of those who died from natural causes had not seen a healthcare provider in 30 days preceding their death. They had symptoms and knew they were getting worse, yet they did not seek the attention of a healthcare provider. We need to conduct further research and answer the question as to why. Overall, they're dying of diseases we treat every day, Drake said. Sad.
Yeah. I mean, they did mention, though, that the areas where these people were not seeking healthcare, they were generally lower educated, higher unemployment, lower income. Mm-hmm. So, they're not getting adequate access to medical care.
Yeah, it's accessibility.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people say who want to push single payer or socialize or whatever, they say we don't have health care, we have sick care. And that's true. We don't have preventative care. You don't see a doctor and the doctor never told me I needed to go lose 50 pounds. They didn't say, your back problems would improve and your plantar fasciitis and your feet would improve. You wouldn't be hurting all the time if you just lost 50 pounds. No doctor ever told me that.
No, they were going to give you...
They were going to give me injections for my foot. They were going to give me cortisone. Why?
Keep you sick, but... Although, interestingly, this kind of sounds like how my grandpa died. Not that he didn't have access to healthcare. He just didn't want to go to the doctor.
And
he
stubborn.
Was feeling, nauseous, sick, and then passed away in his sleep. So if you're feeling sick, go to your doctor.
Well, take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And rounding off today's show, Science Daily, autism symptoms reduced nearly 50% 2 years after fecal transplant. In a new study, long-term benefit of microbiota transfer therapy and autism symptoms and gut microbiota published in Scientific Reports. Arizona State University researchers Rosa Klamajak-Brown, PhD, James Adams, PhD, and lead author Daewoo Kang, PhD, demonstrate long-term beneficial effects for children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, ASD, through a revolutionary technique known as microbiota transfer therapy, MTT, a special type of fecal transplant originally pioneered by Dr. Thomas Bordy, an Australian gastroenterologist. Remarkably, improvements in gut health and autism symptoms appear to persist long after treatment. At 2 years post-treatment, most of the initial improvements in gut symptoms remained. In addition, parents reported a slow, steady reduction of ASD symptoms during treatment and over the next 2 years. A professional evaluator found 45% reduction in core ASD symptoms, language, social interaction, and behavior, at 2 years post-treatment compared to before the treatment began. That's encouraging and so cool and interesting science. Fecal transplant.
It's really awesome because we're still working to understand the relationship between our gut and our brain and how that affects everything from depression, we're saying, or apparently autism, which I was unaware of. But it's also interesting how these effects are long lasting.
Yeah. And the study kind of indicates, because they don't know why this is working for autism.
It's very complex.
Yeah. But they're thinking it's because it's just overall general health. Your gut health gets better. Your body gets better. Everything starts getting better. You know, it's the core reactor, I guess. It starts firing up. Very interesting.
Well, and a lot of people say that you need to have a diverse species of these gut bacteria to help. And if you are missing one of these species, maybe that's where ailments occur.
Yep, exactly.
And, I mean, personally, I have an interest just because, again, I'm celiac. So what if I could get a fecal transplant or something?
Yeah, get someone with great gut bacteria.
And yeah. I don't know if that's been researched enough, but it's definitely something to look into.
Yes. Thanks for tuning in. If you found value and useful information in this show, please support the show by emailing us, askhealthytalkshow.com, leaving us a voicemail, 509-878-3229, or supporting us financially over at healthytalkshow.com/support. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again. Love and light.
Love and light.